Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy connecting the light. My guest today is Sharon Reedy Maynard, and she has been working for 28 years with Teachers in the Unseen, and she tells us that she's been guided through many new avenues of consciousness. She searched the realms of hidden wisdom and ancient truths that she believes can only be assessed with teachers and mentors beyond the physical world. As a result of her experiences, she has come out with her newest book, which is called The Ancient Ones, Out of the Shadows, and she wants to share some of the many topics with us. So, welcome to the program, Sharon.
Thank you very much, Mike. It's really an honor to be here with you and your listeners.
That's very kind of you. We're very, very pleased to have you with us. Now, if I read your information correctly, all of this started for you, that is your spiritual experiences, when you were at the age of 30, when you were pregnant with one of your children. Would you like to fill us in as to the background of how it all occurred?
It was a fun story for me. I was in a traditional religion and in a traditional marriage, and in our particular organization, it was quite okay for a man to get information from God. And then he would tell his wife what that information was, and the wife and the children, we were supposed to then follow that direction. My husband had gotten a call from a friend of his and said, "You know, this is a pretty heavy burden, but I have a method whereby you can hear God really clearly, and therefore you don't have to worry about making a mistake. Can I come and share it with you?" And my husband said, "Oh, indeed you can. Bring your wife and kids and we'll have dinner." Well, after dinner, while I was serving pie and ice cream, which was the wifely duty, and yes, my children were playing with his children, and the men were off in their world, you know, in their room, talking about this wonderful way to listen to God, I served pie and ice cream to them very slowly, because I'm a very curious person and I wanted to know what this amazing process was.
Right.
And so I kind of listened in to what he was being told, how to steel yourself, you know, be quiet, have a quiet place, let the cares of the world drop off, and ask God one question, and then write down what he whispers to you. I thought it was very intriguing. And so when my husband was off to work and my children were either napping or off to school, I tried it.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Wonderful.
Yes. And that was my beginning place. And so I often, and because I couldn't get information for the family that was beyond my realm in that organization, I could at least ask questions about for myself and for my children, you know, what might be a best way to do X, Y, or Z, what would be a better method of approaching them, etc. And so that began my communication into the unseen world.
Right. Now, when this voice came to you, was that appearing to be within your head? I mean, did you actually hear a voice, or was it a sort of impression of what to do? How did you receive it?
For me, it came as words, very clear words. It was not words that I heard in my ear, because it was not being produced by a physical mouth. It was being produced by some in the unseen world with, I assumed, their mind. I did, however, have a checkpoint, and I really, when I'm teaching classes now, I'm very clear in saying you just don't open up to the unseen and say, just anybody come and talk to me. So I had some clear guideposts along the way, and one of them, because of my background, is this information something that I would expect Jesus to say to me? Does it have the timber, the qualities, the love, encouragement that I would expect from that personage? So I had a way to check the information from the best I could. And so I didn't hear it in my ears. It was totally words in my mind, and I would attest it, if you will. So I would say, this is, I want the words to come so fast that I cannot write them, so that I and then I would try, and they did, and then I would try discerning the difference between the energy that it took when I thought and the energy that it took when the words came. So I could see, were they my thoughts or were they not my thoughts? So I had various things I played with to try and decide and discern, was this really me or was it indeed intelligence that wasn't anything that I recognized of my own?
Right. So you initially started out asking a question of God. After some experience with this source, did they acknowledge they were a God source? Did they give themselves a name?
There was always a lot of names that were given. Ascended Masters, Archangels, Sananda, they're present all the time. And again, one thing I really caution my students with is that you don't know if that name is associated with the soul that was that being. You don't see them. So when I'm teaching now, I say to my students, there are two things that you do before you begin this journey. And first, you write a statement, and the statement begins like this. The qualities of my spiritual teachers are, and you fill in the blanks. And then you claim that, own it. I use what I call a reality shift. In other words, the qualities of my spiritual teachers are wisdom, integrity, commitment, love, generosity, the greater good. And I move my consciousness into that reality where it is indeed true for me, and heal anything that would keep that experience from me. That creates a boundary, an energy boundary, so that your spiritual team, because we all have a spiritual team, your spiritual team then has some discernment that they say, okay, we can now begin deciding and measuring the character quality of those who want to speak to this person against the qualities that this person has put in place.
Yes.
So that's one thing to do. And the other is then a statement, something like this. My experiences in working with the spiritual teachers and the spiritual realm are, and what are they? Are they empowering? Are they enlightening? Do they inspire? And then you claim experiences. So you set your, set my criteria not on names, but on quality of character.
Yes.
And yes, I have had all the names you could imagine have been there and worked in what we've been doing.
Right. Now, there's one name you mentioned that I particularly recognize, because Sananda is very well known as a spiritual teacher.
Yes.
Is Sananda one of your more regular teachers? I mean, is there such a thing, or do you just get any particular one at any time?
He has been the main spokesperson for me,
right,
from the beginning. I have worked with Archangel Michael and Raphael and Sai Baba and Babaji and Kuan Yin. I've worked with just most all of Nadia, and because I work with individuals, they have, the Archangel Michael might be specific to one of my clients, and so they show up for them because that's who they're associated with.
Uh-huh. Right. I must say, Archangel Michael is one of my very favorite sources of messages, and I think he's so energetic and so inspiring, and I particularly love the ones that come through Rona Herman. But I think this is what you identify with, isn't it? The sort of energy in the message. And it somehow tells you whether or not it's of a certain high quality. Is that what you find?
It is. And I find that their personalities come through. Some of them are, they just are, have a laughter energy with them, very deep, joyous laughter. Some of them are a little bit more somber. Some of them have, there's just a personality that comes with each, and you can tell when someone else moves in to talk to you, because there's a shift in that personality energy, a soul energy. We aren't all alike. We're unique, even on a soul level, which doesn't surprise any of us.
Yeah. Now, over the years, speaking with these people, which I guess you did, or receiving their messages, did you use them in the traditional method then of putting them out as sort of spiritual messages, or were they more personal, just for you?
From 1971, when I began, until 75, my husband was killed in a car accident at that time. So this became, this group of advisors became all important to me in raising my children. It was very personal. I didn't use it for any other purpose other than what do I need to do day by day almost with raising children. I had nine. And it wasn't until 1989. So I had had that much experience with them, and they were very clear from the beginning that they were training, that we were in training, and that there would come a time when I would be very glad for this period where we could just have conversations and have the time to get to know each other, if you will.
Yes.
And
yes.
In 89, I had a teaching center called The Open Door, and I heard, and also a regional publication from that center, and I heard of a woman who had grown up around the corner from me living in New York City. And I went there because she was doing chakra crystal balancing, which was very foreign to how we both grew up. But I wanted to know how she had made her journey through.
Yes.
And my experience with her opened the door to energy healing, literally, you know, moving energy with your hands, using stones and crystals, which I had never considered doing. And when I came back to the office and I started sharing what she had taught me with my friends, they found it so powerful, and I did too. But we were existing under the old onion layer mentality, and so every week a new issue would come up, and they'd be back. Every 2 weeks, they'd be back. And I said to my spiritual team, you know, we have, as human beings, we have too much to do. We can't be chasing these little onion layers. And so I can see the value of this hands-on spiritual work connected to what I had learned to do, which is more the affirmations. I could see they come together very well, but I am not willing to do an onion layer approach. Certainly, there is a cause of humanity's pain that if we went to that depth to find the cause of humanity's pain, that we could short-circuit this digging and picking up the sand off the seashore approach. So I said, where can I go to learn that? And they said, it's not being done that way on the planet. If you want to know that, then we will have to teach you.
Right.
And I said, then that's what I'm up for. And that was the decision and choice that took my telepathic communication, spiritual communications, out of the realm of personal, into the realm of what it is and how we can impact humanity in a more powerful way in that transformational healing and relief.
Now, I believe it's going back a little bit, but there was an important experience you had in 1980 when you had a dream that came to you every week for 3 weeks. I believe that was possibly an important time for you. Would you like to tell us about that?
Yeah, that was an important time. That was a dream that I had about inheriting a home from my grandmother, my paternal grandmother. And in that dream, I woke within the dream, and it was amazing, beautiful old home. And I had 9 children, as I've mentioned. And in the dream, I had my 9 children. And we were living on the back porch of my grandmother's home. And I heard a voice say to me, "Why are you on the back porch when you have the whole home?" And I said, in my dream, I said, "Because that home hasn't been lived in for so long. This is where my grandmother lived, on the porch. And I'm afraid that if I try to go back into the home, it's going to be so costly, too much time, too many repairs. I'm going to stay here." And instantly, the next section of the dream, I was in my grandmother's home in one of the bedrooms. It was warm, it was clean, linens on the bed, drawers were full of clothes. Everything was prepared in that home. And I woke up and I went, interesting, because I love old homes. My grandmother had passed. And a week later, I had the same dream. Now, that got my attention. So I said, well, there's something about the dream. And then I said, okay, I guess I'll pay attention. The next week, the dream came the third time. This time, when I went into the home, it was in the kitchen. It was a beautiful, huge country kitchen, soup on the stove, table sets, everything clean and warm, big windows. And I said, how did I get to this room? And they said, there's a key in the pocket of your apron. And then I woke up, and that's when, I was not a fast learner. I could have done this the first week. Sat down, and I said, what is it you're trying to tell me? And they said, remember your grandmother. My grandmother on my father's side was very clairvoyant, very psychic. We know that because of the stories she tells, but she never used it. She lived on the back porch because her community and her religious community would never have supported her skill and her ability. So she used a small portion, as I had accepted. But what that did for me, it made it possible for me to feel really comfortable. It was like they were saying, everything's ready. You don't have to worry. You don't have to be afraid. Just open the door. You got the key in your apron.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happened between that time in 1980, when you had this dream experience, to the incident that you experienced 16 years later when you were challenged by a Native American who wanted you to get cracking, I guess?
Yes, well, I started when my guide said, okay, if you want to see the cause of humanity's pain, then we'll have to teach you because it's not being done on the planet. So we want you to stop reading books, get a journal, keep notes, ask us your questions, and step by step we will open the doors to that old history for you. And that was in 89-90. And so I did that, and the first thing they said to me is that there isn't just one world. There are 8. And they didn't mean dimensions, they meant worlds or regions. The earth is one of the worlds through which your greater family has moved. It's the last, it's the densest. But the other 7 worlds are impacting this 8th region, this 8th world, and the dimensions within that world. So instead of there being 8 dimensions, there are 8 worlds of 8 dimensions each, or 64 dimensions, and we want you to work in the world of the 8th, the earth, and when its time is right, we will open the others to you. So for 10 years, they were showing me all kinds of things in relationship to the earth. One of them was opened when I had asked the question to my guides and to the teachers, you know, about life purpose, because a lot of people in the early 90s were coming to me with, can you help me know my life's purpose? They were really pushing ascension, running into all kinds of walls. And so my team said there, everyone comes in on a specific color ray that can be equated to a quality or a purpose, an overall big purpose. So I call it an assigned vibration.
Yes.
So they would, as a client would come, they said, this is assigned vibration, this person's assigned vibration is green, or it's orange, or it's yellow, or it's green. And it was, you know, so then my curiosity was piqued, and I started asking about other forms, cities, organizations. And yes, indeed, they have assigned vibrations, too. They have a purpose. So then I said, well, what about gender? And they said, yes, there is a purpose for each gender, which was a little surprising to me. And they said, I said, what is the assigned vibration for a soul coming into a female body, into the female gender? And they said, it is correct use of power, it's leadership. I said, well, we got that one wrong. What about male? And they said, the assigned vibration for a male body experience is nurturance, is love and heart. And then that was, and I explored that a little bit, and that was kind of where I was at in 1995, 6, I think, or maybe 7, maybe it was 97. And I was at a lecture, a Native American documentary filmmaker here in the Washington State area was giving a lecture on a film he'd just produced, and it was about the different prophecies from the Native American traditions around the world. And he spoke about being in South America, and he was told about a tribe in Borneo that had been literally eliminated, that another tribe had gone into their village with the intention to eliminate the opposing village. So one tribe of Native peoples went into this second village, and they destroyed the village, killed their elders, took away some of the children to assimilate them into their tribe, and this village basically ceased to exist. The bones were put into a cave, and the bodies were put into a cave as if the village was gone. And about 16, 17 years later, three young men happened to meet in a little bit of a big, larger city there, and as they were talking, they realized that they were all from that village. And they felt totally impressed that they must go back to their village and sleep in the cave until they could dream awake the bones of their ancestors, bring back the wisdom. And he said, I must go there and meet these young men, which he did. He told the story of their incredible passion and what they were learning. And afterward, I went up to him and just thanked him for what he was doing and told him I was extremely impressed with the story of the young men in Borneo. And he looked me in the eye and he said, when are you going to dream awake the bones of your ancestors? And I looked at him. I know he saw the puzzlement in my face. And he said, the women. And I was shocked, but that has become my journey also, is the return of the women to their rightful place, to their voice, because they are key to returning the planet to its intended place and humanity to who aren't in a place. So that has taken me, I've been working with women in various ways for the last 10 years, and I'm seeing that evolution and that movement and that awakening happen. And I know that we as women have been just as decimated as that village. We have become just as assimilated into a false system as those young men had been. And as a result, our brothers and our families and our world has suffered.
Right. So this experience has made you obviously more interested in re-establishing the proper place for women in our society, and perhaps it's only in the last 50 years that they've been allowed to come up to the same status as man. They have really been kept in the background.
They have.
But of course your interest is, I guess, more of a spiritual approach rather than a material one.
Yeah, I think the most powerful work we do is in the unseen. That doesn't mean that the work we do in that unseen world of spirit ought not to have a corresponding action in the physical world. And it certainly must be impactful on the spiritual world. But yeah, my work has been, you know, I do a lot of interviews, I do a lot of empowering, I do a lot of personal sessions, I do a lot of coaching. And it's not that I exclude men, but I find that when women make the shift into their authenticity, it's like, what, that's what men have been waiting for, even though they may not know that that's what they've been waiting for.
Right. I must say that there is an interesting point that always came to me when I used to run my groups many years ago. Generally speaking, where spiritual knowledge was concerned, there were always many more women at the meeting than men.
Yes. And I think what you want me to give you my idea there?
Sorry?
I said that from what I can gather and discern, it has a lot to do with the fact that when women were disconnected, literally we were disconnected circuitry-wise, we were disconnected from our power center, which is the solar plexus, the belly.
Yes.
We were disconnected from that power center and artificially plugged into a heart center too soon. Where the men were disconnected from the circuitry-wise, they were disconnected from the heart center and plugged artificially into a power center based on a greed model. That's not our masculine men. That's not who they are. They are heart-centered, powerful,
yes.
Heart-centered. And so what has occurred over the years has been, in a male body experience, has been a buildup of heart pain. Heart pain is very, very raw. And women's pain has been around power. That's different. It's not raw.
Yeah.
And so women, when they start waking up, they get angry. And they have to go through a phase of anger and even blame. It's part of the journey for most, but it's because it's the power center we're trying to reconnect to. So anger is not hard to go through compared to raw heart emotional pain. And so I think that it's been a much easier task for women to say, I'm waking up, I'm tired of not being who I am. I'm tired of being pushed around. I'm angry about that, and I'm going to learn whatever I need to learn, do whatever I need to do to change it. And that's been our path. For a man, they have to, you know, say, I'm going to wake up means I'm going to feel the pain of my heart. No, thank you. And so they have treaded very, very lightly and cautiously, I think, into personal growth.
Do you think that men are a little bit frightened of their more feminine side?
I think that they have been taught to be embarrassed by it. I don't think they're afraid of it. I think it has been made to appear so foreign to them that they are reluctant to admit they have it, and that keeps them out of the powerful mission place that they are as the heart connectors for our planet, and that's what's kept us, what kept part of the imbalance for our world. The men haven't really been allowed, and they have been discouraged from coming from their heart and in a powerful way.
Yes.
And as women have been crippled and crushed and tortured when they've tried to come from their power and be a voice for designing the world.
I think a lot of that has to do with perhaps a young man's bringing up, in the sense that he's moulded into a certain type of male that is powerful, that doesn't show fear, doesn't cry, possibly withholds his emotions, and he's moulded into that type of figure whether he likes it or not.
Yes, the systems that we have, whether it's a family system or a religious system or a corporate system or a government system, our systems and our organizations are all based on base survival. What do I have to do to survive? And a woman has to be quiet, and a man has to pretend to love power. And so we've been taught those roles, but this happened. The structuring of that kind of world began generations ago. And in order to do the shift that we want to have happen and talk about happening, it is a shift literally from one system circuitry that says survive to a divine system circuitry that says thrive. It's massive. It's not about isolation, it's about cooperation. It's not about power over, it's about collaboration. It isn't about everyone being the same, it's about diversity in our oneness. It's a massive shift.
Right. Now, what was it you learnt about the multi-dimensional aspects beyond the eighth dimensions of Earth? Because you mentioned about energy constructs that you say are the basis for evil. What were you taught about that?
Well, and like I said, I spent 10 years from 89 to 99 looking, being shown things within the world. You know, when people say, I've tried the affirmations and I've tried the secret and you know, it doesn't work. The truth of it is, it's the tip of the iceberg of truth. It's a very, very small amount. So I spent 10 years in showing, you know, what we've done and how we've crippled ourselves just with our Earth experience. The fall of 1999, I had a client come and who'd had what he called sticky fear, had never done energy work before, was absolutely... would have never come and gotten on my table had he not had this intense feeling that kept crippling him. You know, he just couldn't move forward. Somebody suggested he try me, so he did. When we were doing what I call a soul integration, he went back to a time where he saw himself disconnected from God, from Source. Mm-hmm. In my mind, as I'm listening to him, I'm going like, okay, he's misinterpreted, because we do. Our Father spanks us, and we make up the story that I'm not loved, for example, and we live the story. So we make up stuff, and it's a yes. misinterpretation of the experience. So in my mind, I'm listening to him, making notes, but in my mind, I'm going, okay, we're going to have to go back. This is probably a misunderstanding. And my guides immediately stepped in and said, don't go there. And I said, you mean there's some truth in it? And they said, yes.
Oh,
I said, okay. So he went on to talk about that being cut off from God, floating out there free, totally starting to dissolve, an experiment gone bad. And we went through what, you know, the process, and realigned him. And then he went out happy camper and never heard from him since. He's off doing his life, which is what I want. I don't want weekly sessions. And so afterward I said, okay, fill me in. What is that? And that's when they said, okay, your greater family, I call it a galactic family, because it's a greater family. It's greater. There's more consciousnesses in our family than those who have just done Earth experience. Some in our family have not done Earth experience. They are holding various frequencies for us in other worlds. So they said, your galactic family, we're all together in what we will call Source. And an idea moved through that realm that attracted this group of consciousnesses of these individuals. And the idea was, what would it be like to experience as directly as much of the possibilities within Source as we can? Direct experiences of Source possibilities, which are all based on love, by the way. And that was an idea that we were attracted to, we said yes to, and eventually we birthed as a family on that adventure with that agenda into what we called the first world, which was the world where we were all one group mind, those of us who were aligned to that agenda. And we had the experience there until frequency-wise we then burst, and then we extended, I should say, into the second world region. And we were at that point four group families. You guys take the red rays, this group will take the yellow rays, and you guys take the blue, and this other group will take the green. That would be kind of how you could say it. In World 1, we all experienced white till we were over the top with white. Now we're going to extend, and each of us take a specific ray, and we'll really get deep into that ray. Vicariously, I will experience red, yellow, and blue, because my group is doing green. That's the second world. And in the third world, we now are in 12 groups, large groups, and we decide that we want to experience chaos. And we introduced chaos, and the plan that we had was that we would experience chaos. Each of those groups would experience it uniquely. We programmed ourselves, just like you'd programmed a slot machine, that every once in a while we go into chaos. So those 12 groups were in chaos various times from the beginning of that experiment, kind of like programming yourself for epilepsy, just to see what it would be like when you had a seizure. And we intended And that chaos, of course, becomes fear vibration, which when it slows down even farther, it becomes all forms of fear. So we began that chaos experiment with the intention that one by one we would deprogram ourselves. We would realign the numbers and we for our individual group, and we would then return to wholeness. So we would take a slight dip in frequency and then back up. That
right.
didn't happen. And that was the, and that in the third world is the cause of humanity's pain, our unending fear, and our boundaries that have allowed in hitchhiking and parasitic societies that have caused even more havoc, who brought the agenda of greed, of usury, of power over. That is never, was never our agenda. It was never our nature. Human nature is not one of greed and maliciousness and mean and war and conflict. That is not human galactic nature. That is outsider.
Right. I must say, there are quite a few spiritual teachings that refer to exactly the same thing, that is our separation from God and our feeling of perhaps being lost or lacking something. And of course, chaos ensues, which is what you said earlier on. Now, what I'd like to ask you is, with all this information you've got, how does it fit in with the current period we're in? Because I'm guessing that perhaps like most people, you've heard that the vibrations are rising up and there is to be an event in the near future where we take a quantum leap in consciousness. So do your teachings or does your knowledge agree with that?
Well, I didn't get just get the information. And the next question always is, what do we do about it?
Mm-hmm.
So even though a lot of others may have knowledge of that separation and of that parasitic invasion and the reptilians and all those things, what I did that was different is says, what do we do about that? And so from 2000, 2001 onward, they gave me processes whereby we went up and we corrected that third world. The third world has been corrected. There is no longer fear energy coming to us unlimitedly. That has been corrected as of 2003, 2004. It was beginning to reach us that our wholeness energy was now beginning to reach us here on the planet. The other thing we did is we found that those parasitic societies literally owned us by contract. We had given away our power by contract through those galactic worlds. We went in and we removed and eliminated those contracts because we no longer are owned by parasitic outsiders, some of them taking the name of God. They
yes.
do not own us anymore. We can literally say, and have been for the last 3 years, saying to any energy, form, expression, behavior that has the agenda of greed, usury, conflict, we can literally say to that energy, I know who you are. I remove you back to your home planet. We have been clearing those galactic realms and this world of those energies, and anyone can now do it. We have been correcting contracts we made, eliminated contracts we made in those galactic worlds to limit our energy, to play possum, if you will. We've been restructuring circuitry, the DNA, as we have been taught it, the 7 points, is a survival chakra. It's a parasitic model. We've been replacing that with our divine circuitry. So that is what my work has been about. Not just knowing, but saying, what do we do about it? How do we
yes.
take back our divinity, our agenda, our space? And I can tell you that those World 1 through 7 are no longer scattered. You no longer have fear energy. There is a unity there, a collaborativeness there that is helping us in this world to make the shift that needs to be made. Without their help, without that correction, we would never make the shift that we're going to be making.
So what you're really saying is we've got to transmute whatever energies are left on the earth.
Yes.
And I notice you talk of bringing humanity back into their sovereignty and divine nature, which seems to be very much the goal that other people talk about. So I feel there's definitely something very grand which is going to come upon us in the very near future. Now, we're by no means at the end of the program, Sharon, but it might be a good point here to tell us a little bit about your book, if it, where it's available, the title, where people can get some information on it. So perhaps you'd like to take a few minutes to give out that information.
That would be great. I wrote a book in 1995 called The Ancient Ones, The Mission Remembered. I was told to get it out at that moment in time, which I did. But I knew there was a trilogy. And the first one was The Mission Remembered. The second one would be called The Cries of the Children. And the third one would be the Ancient Ones, Their Message Today. So 95, The Ancient Ones, Mission Remembered came out. And from that point until about 2001, a lot of learning took place for me. So that when I was ready to do the second book, The Cries of the Children, The Mission Remembered really needed to be upgraded and more meat put into it, if you will. So the book that you're referring to is called The Ancient Ones, Out of the Shadows, because we are coming out of the shadows. It's available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, I believe, has it, iUniverse.com has it. My website for that book is AncientsOutOfTheShadows.com. And it's a fictionalized story of all of the concepts relating to our mission on the planet, for the planet, the impact it's having on our children and our families, what we need to start looking at doing, and that is what you'll find in that book. There's a website that has some other practical booklets, kind of applications of those concepts, and it's called www.beginsinenergy, and that.com, and that has a booklet, Female Gender of Leadership, Male Gender of Nurturance, the Patriarchal Myth, and a new booklet that will be out by the end of the month will be called Fault Systems and the Spoon Benders. So there's a lot out there, and my work is the tag matrix work. That's all of my communication is about what do we do to transmute and heal and get on with what it is that we are here by divine assignment to do. And so there you go.
Right. I think it would be wise for me to give that last website address out again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's beginsinenergy.
.com.
Just in case they didn't catch the fact that it was begins with an S in the middle of it.
Yes, it begins.
Anyway, when I do my archive report, which some people drop into to read, I shall put both of your websites in there anyway. So what do you think is the important message in your last book? I mean, how do you view that?
In Out of the Shadows, the important message is to recognize that we have been living under some very false constructs. We have been trying to live by divine laws and rules in a crippled body that doesn't respond to those rules. We've been trying to live in this world in organizations and systems and we that do not function by divine rules, and we've been trying to live by divine rules, and we've been wondering what is wrong with us. And I'm saying there is nothing wrong with you. You've forgotten your history. It's time to dream awake our bones, and here are the bones. We are a divine family whose agenda and nature is loving and generous, adventuresome, curious. We are wise. We are intelligent. And we created an experiment when we were immature and young on the third world. And that experiment has caused us a lot of pain trying to simply survive long enough to get back to our correct frequencies. And we have done it. We have survived long enough, and now we can drop off the costumes that we had to take on, the costumes that says, be small, don't be who you are, don't rock the boat, pretend to be owned. We can drop those costumes off. We needed them to survive. We would have been killed had we not, you know. We needed to survive, and now it's time to remember and who you are, to reconnect to your harmonic, to your mission, to begin to hear those guiding words of your spiritual team that we were also disconnected from. We've tried so hard to hear.
Right. Well, I think that's an excellent way to end the program, which is what we've got to do, unfortunately, Sharon.
I've got a short
time left to announce next week's guest, so I must thank you very much for coming onto the program. It's been very intriguing and interesting listening to your story, and I wish you all success in the future.
Thank you so much, Mike, and we are here simply for the world to be the glorious place that we intended it to be.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Well, dear friends, I'm sure you enjoyed that. My guest next week will be Nash Murad, who has a new book out called How to Be Right About Everything. And in it, he examines how we can improve our lives by learning to fully accept others. His personal study is focused on religions, spirituality, and personal growth philosophy. So again, I think that sounds very interesting, so I hope you can be with me. Thank you for being with me today. God bless you all. Thank you.